Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We'll be in-depth on why Congress refuses to regulate drug prices. But first, to the week ahead and behind us in Washington, it's political junkie time. Hi, Ken Rudin. How are you? Ken, are you there? Uh-oh, we might be having some problems with Ken here. Hi, Ken. Are you there? Hi.
I'm here.
Oh, I thought I was going to have to miss my morning chat with Ken Rudin. How are you?
Oh, no, we can't have that.
Ah, good. I'm glad you're there. Hey, we're talking about healthcare here in depth, as we often do on Mondays. And I was wondering if Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has any more tricks in his bag to revive the healthcare bill.
Well, you know, it's probably like Glenn Close and Fatal Attraction. You always think that Glenn Close is not coming back, but she always seems to resurface from out of the bathtub or whatever. Look, the Republicans are not finished with healthcare. They promised that would be their first bit of action once they took over. And Donald Trump keeps saying, well, you know, this Congress is really, really bad. It can't even do health care. So I wouldn't say it's gone forever, and it can't be gone forever. But right now there's other deadlines coming up with a federal debt limit, with a debt ceiling, with a budget that has to come up. So there are other things that may take precedence, but I don't think we can say it's gone forever, and it can't be. Lamar Alexander, who's the chair of the Senate Health Committee, is now actually committing the unpardonable sin of working with Democrats
right.
to work out with some kind of language on fixing the Affordable Care Act. And I think that would probably be the next step.
Senator Alexander is going to hold hearings in September, Ken.
Right.
Maybe this is the way I should ask this. Have they given up on a full repeal and replacing this on their own? I mean, has it become clear that they can't do that? They are going to have to bring some Democrats into the process.
Well, Donald Trump hasn't given up on that. People like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, you know, conservative senators, probably have not given up on that. But I think reality, given the fact that we had this Voterama, it seems like six months ago. But I mean, they tried everything they could to do whatever they can to do it among Republicans, keep Democrats out. And that didn't work. As long as you're going to have people like Murkowski and Collins and maybe John McCain voting no, you won't even get 50 votes, let alone 60 votes. So I think the only option is to work with Democrats.
Did you see the video from Mitch McConnell's appearance in Kentucky over the weekend and what he was saying about not being able to pass health care?
I did not.
So I guess he was at some kind of forum and someone asked him about not being able to pass health care. And he said, well, it could be worse. Hillary Clinton could be president. I guess that's the answer.
You know something? Every time Kellyanne Conway or somebody in the administration is asked about Russia or the investigations or the chaos going in the White House, every answer is either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. And at some point, I know for the longest time, the Democrats would always talk about Herbert Hoover in the White House. And I remember for decades at the Democratic convention, they would always say, well, remember what Herbert Hoover did? And I said, okay, enough of that. Sometime, at some point in my lifetime, hopefully, we're going to stop talking about Hillary Clinton's fault and Barack Obama's fault.
A new national poll puts the president's approval rating at 33% last week. He's tweeting today that 200 days into his administration, the base is with him and the base is in good shape. There's more to the story, Ken. So what is that more to the story?
Well, there is. Look, the base is with him for the most part. But more importantly, Republicans in Congress are showing more of independence than they've ever shown before. The fact is, when they voted overwhelmingly, the House and Senate voted overwhelmingly for sanctions on Russia, North Korea, and Iran, it was not because they wanted to punish these three countries. It's really that they don't trust the president on his relationship with Russia, and that's why they put in the Russian sanctions as well. The fact is that they're doing everything they can not to go on to have a pro forma sessions, not to go on a complete break in August, because they fear that Donald Trump would fire Jeff Sessions and ram through another attorney general who might fire Robert Mueller. The Republicans have done some kind of, they're proposing legislation to keep Trump from firing Mueller by saying that it has to be approved by a judge.
That's just unbelievable, isn't it?
Well,
we have to take note of what you're saying. They're putting laws in place for a Republican, for a president who is of their own party to restrain him, diminish his power.
I always used to say that the only reason Richard Nixon ultimately gave up his power in 1974 was not because of Peter Rodino or Sam Ervin or Elizabeth Holzman or people like that, but it was people like Barry Goldwater and other Republicans who went to him and said, look, it's just, you know, it's not tenable anymore. It's time to go. And we were always wondering, when would the Republicans who control the House and Senate, when would they finally have enough? Now, I don't know if they've had enough, but the fact is they're standing up to the president that they had in ways they haven't done in the first 6 months of his presidency.
So I think we ought to talk about agenda wise what it really means when, as you acknowledge, there's a core number of the president's base who remain with him. We see what's happening with independents and we see what's happening with congressional Republicans. What does all of that mean for his agenda when they get back in September?
Well, I mean, that's the real question. As far as just the other day when Donald Trump said that relationship with Russia is the worst it's been in a long time. And who do we blame? We blame Congress. That's what he said. We don't blame Russia because of its incursions into Crimea or Ukraine or the fact that it tried to influence and sabotage the election or that there are business deals with the Trump family and Russian businessmen. It's Congress's fault. So it just seems like, look, they're going to go home for a month. I mean, we talked about only 2 weeks, but now that healthcare is dead for now, it's going to be a full month. And members of Congress who are going to at least dare go out and meet their constituents are going to hear that this is just untenable, what's going on, and this can't go on. And the only way for things to get done is for Democrats and Republicans to just coexist. And so it's very possible that whatever hesitation members of Congress have, or at least Republican members of Congress have right now on regarding Trump, it'll be even more so when they come back in September.
Wait a minute. So are you saying that there will be pressure for them to work with Democrats to get some of these laws?
Okay. Oh, absolutely. Well, more independence from the president.
I was just going to say, so here's my question then. For the president to bring those independents who have fallen away back into the fold, you know, having legislation passed with Democrats is probably not a bad thing. Right. Because you see a lot of independents saying, do anything, get something done. And if that requires working with the other side, do it.
True. But there are the Mitch McConnells of the world. Mitch McConnell is not an ideologue, but he is a Republican loyalist. And he knows that once you open up health care to the evil ways of Chuck Schumer, then, you know, you're not going to have the pure conservative repeal of Obamacare that Republicans have been promising for the next 7 years. So, look, Mitch McConnell did everything he could to get the Republicans on board health care. He did get 49 Republican votes, and that's not bad considering the fact that the skinny bill was considered just such an awful, awful bill, and yet you got 49.
Yeah.
But ultimately, he can't break the 50-vote threshold, and the answer may be just working with those evil and dangerous Democrats.
Ken Rudin is with us, as he always is, on Mondays. If you have a question for him about President Trump, we haven't even talked about the Russian investigation, some of the other issues that have come up, feel free to call or tweet in 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, of course, at @KerryMPR. So you will be happy to know that I don't have a mystery newsmaker for you today, Ken. But I saw an interesting remark that I think we're gonna base a show on here from Heather McGee of Demos. She was on Meet the Press yesterday, and she was talking about Democrats and the progressive wing of the party and what she thinks they don't understand. So listen to this.
And I think the key thing to watch here is the millennial generation and younger, who are going to be 90 million strong in the 2020 election, who more than anyone are feeling like they inherited we, I'm like a millennial grandmother here, inherited an economy that is completely broken, a politics that is broken. The people are looking for a populism, but a multiracial populism. They're looking for candidates who say, I'm willing to take on the wealthy and powerful, and also, I'm not willing to let the wealthy and powerful divide us from each other so that they can have the spoils of our great nation. And that is actually, I think, the message that unites identity and class, because we've seen, frankly, the right wing in one breath talk about what's wrong with the economy and scapegoat people of color and immigrants. And I think progressives really need to similarly understand how to weave those messages together.
Now, Heather will probably tell us when she's on that that is easier said than done. But what do you think of the philosophy, Ken?
I think it's easier said than done.
Somebody just said that, didn't they?
No, I know. No, I'm teasing because I'm, first of all, she's talking about 2020. I mean, the day of the 2016 election, we couldn't predict what was going to happen later that day. So talk about what's going to happen in 2020.
Yeah, but
seems
she's
to be a little bit.
But an overall. But overall, there are factions.
There is factionalism in the Democratic Party. We talk about the Trump loyalists and the John Kasichs of the world who are fighting each other on the Republican side. There are big factionalism in the Democratic Party between the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren wing of the party, and those who feel that by moving too far left, you lose the blue-collar workers that we Democrats lost to Trump in 2016. So I mean, sure, it's going to be, they're going to be looking for candidates, and they're already talking about 2020 and about how Kamala Harris is already planning to measure the drapes for the White House in 2021. We have a long way to go. Let's see what happens in 2018 first.
Yeah.
If it is a rout of the Republican Party, and it may not be, the numbers favor the Republicans for the Senate. Democrats do have a shot at winning the House. But let's see what happens after that. You know, I had last week on my Political Junkie show, I had Brad Sherman, the California congressman who's offered a bill to impeach President Trump. I mean, right now, the thought of impeaching Trump in a Republican Congress seems foolhardy. But the more I hear about what Robert Mueller is up against, or at least what he's been doing, the fact that I hear that Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, is saying that nothing is out of bounds for Mueller to investigate an impeachment, or, you know, an early end of the Trump administration is not as far-fetched as it once was. Let's wait through 2017. Let's watch the 2018 election, and then I'll comment on comments.
All right. So did you see the Times story, though, about the Republican contenders who are scheduling trips to Iowa and Pence? Does this happen every time and it's just more notable because Trump is so unpopular and alienating people in his own party? Or is there something unusual going on?
Can I say something as an exclusive on your show? I'll probably say it every show I'm on, but it's an exclusive on your show.
Okay.
I think Trump is going to run for re-election if he's not ousted from office as an independent.
Whoa,
I don't think he runs
as
a Republican. Yep.
Interesting.
I think that one of his reasons for attacking Republicans as often as he attacks Democrats is because he's truly not a Republican, and I think he could theoretically win a second term as a third party. But anyway, the story about Mike Pence preparing for the worst and meeting all these people, I thought the Times story was well overblown, and of course, Pence is really calling it fake news. But here's why it didn't make sense to me, because there are a lot of Republicans who feel that Mike Pence is the real deal, a true believer, a true conservative, whereas Donald Trump believes in only the thing he thought of 5 minutes earlier, and he could change his mind 5 minutes from now. So it makes sense that Pence is making all these speeches and raising this money and having a political action committee. It doesn't mean that he's plotting the end or preparing for the end of Trump in 2020. It's something what a vice president, an ambitious vice president, would do. And I really thought that the Times went a little bit overboard with that story.
Ken, one question back to what you said about Trump maybe running as an independent. The barrier to reaching critical mass for an independent is huge. I mean, Ross Perot, did he end up getting 13% or something? Remind me.
Well, he got 19% of the vote, but he got zero electoral votes.
Okay.
But
so
the thing is,
go ahead.
But remember, there was a time early in 1992 where he was actually leading Bill Clinton and President Bush. So, of course, I mean, he fell apart because very few people realize Ross Perot was born on another planet. But I mean, for a while, he was making a lot of sense. And I think that the fact that Trump has his built-in audience and loyalty that he certainly, you know, has and will probably have through 2018 and 2000. Look, I'm not, who knows what's going to happen, but I think that the impediments that we've seen third-party candidates have in the past, certainly like Ross Perot, who had plenty of money but no electoral votes, that may not be the same thing standing in the way of Donald Trump in 2020. Who knows?
Ken, always a pleasure. Talk to you next Monday. Thank you.
I'll see if I can come up with another exclusive for your show.
Please do.
Thanks, Gary.
Ken Rudin, the political junkie, with us on Mondays to talk politics. A look at the latest news